Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. Keep your calls and comments coming to us, please, on 086 60 25,000. Greg, that access to GPs isn't only a Donegal issue. I have family who are working in Dublin after college and they can't get a GP. They don't have a medical card. They have to use the health insurance, and if they need a doctor or any medical procedure, they contact insurance and they give them details of a centre, or in some cases a doctor will talk to you over the phone. This means that you are seeing a different doctor each time you're sick. It's disgraceful how the Irish are being treated. Okay, I think we can say now good morning to Dr. Fidelma Brady. Good morning, Fidelma.
Good morning, Greg. How are you? Thank you for having me.
I am doing good. No, and thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Fidelma Brady is Head of Education, Primary and Post-Primary with Down Syndrome Ireland. Now, your organisation, like others that we spoke to last week, are gravely concerned by the content of a circular issued by the Department of Education. The Special Education Teacher SET allocation model and the calculation of the SET allocation for each school from the 24-25 school year until further notice. Now, I think it's really important to point out here that the minister responsible in the Dáil, and I'm sure you heard this, Fidelma, conceded that this decision will see one third of schools lose set hours effectively. So that's the minister with responsibility conceding that this measure will actually see less set support in schools, which I think is a remarkable admission. Oh, okay, so for those new to this story, maybe Fidelma, you might outline what the changes have taken place. It's a box effectively that no longer exists.
Exactly, Greg. Thank you very much. Up to the production of this circular, indeed there's two circulars, Greg. One is for primary schools and one is for post-primary schools, but the content is essentially the same. Up to this, the category of complex needs, complex educational needs, was always there. It was always considered in part of the allocation of special education teaching in schools. Now, within this circular, that category has been removed. And there is no longer a defined category or a specific category there for children with complex needs, which, of course, I'm speaking today on behalf of the members of Down Syndrome Ireland. Children with Down syndrome have always been considered to have complex needs because, as well as the syndrome, many of them have issues with vision, with hearing, other health difficulties. So that in itself becomes a complex need. And essentially that category has been removed. And we are now in a very confused state. I suppose we're angry from the point of view of there was absolutely no consultation on this. It came as a bombshell to not just our organisation or our members, but to everybody. And I know a lot of the other disability organisations have come out and said the same.
And what I find particularly, well, there's a lot, but an element of this that I find particularly troubling for Fidelma is that I don't think any school is going to use the example of a child with Down syndrome, is going to pull special education teacher resources from them. They're going to make that decision in-house. So any shortfall in hours has the potential to affect other children as well.
And
so,
and that's part of the big problem, Greg. That's why, you know, this is going to affect all parents of all children, because what's going to happen now, of course, the child with Down syndrome or indeed other complex needs, they are still going to need a specific amount of support to make any progress. And what's going to happen is the support is going to be allocated to the school. That support then is going to have to be spread so thinly throughout the school to try and meet everybody's needs that there's a very real risk that children who may just be on the fringes or who may have benefited from availing of additional support in literacy or numeracy, they will get absolutely nothing. And the support is going to be spread so thinly that nobody will really benefit.
So it puts teachers and parents all in. Like I spoke to a parent last week who's also a teacher, and of course concerned about her child, but actually really the majority of the concern is that will her child also take supports away from other children that need them? Like, how can a parent be sort of painted into that corner where, of course, we all want the best for our own, but we're being forced to sort of, you know, feel bad for other children as well? It's crazy.
Absolutely.
In this day and age.
It's a very, very difficult situation. I actually heard your caller on Friday, Emma, who gave a very, very good account of her situation as a mother. We recently, within Down syndrome, we conducted a survey of our members, and 30% of our members have issues with education anyway, have problems and have issues that they can identify with education. And they don't need this on top of all that. You know, parents are dealing with enough and trying to cope with enough and work with their children the best way possible. They don't need any additional issues to come up. And this was particularly a bombshell, Greg. Basically, the rug was pulled out from under us last week with the introduction of these two circulars. Absolutely no consultation, no prior notice that this was going to happen.
Obviously, I try my best, as best I can in all situations, to try and come at this from a different angle, to tease out the conversation, to play devil's advocate, maybe to represent the views of the department in the absence of them being on the programme. But I can't come up with any rationale to put to you to sort of tease this out with you and to get your views. I am incapable of structuring an argument that could in any way explain or justify this decision.
Well, just one point particularly on that, Greg. The department have identified the lack of data access or the data access issue with the CDNT network. What the CDNT networks are, there are teams of health and social care professionals, and they work with children from birth to 18 years. They are under the auspices of the Department of Health. So I suppose our big issue with that would be if the problem, as quoted by the Department of Education, is stemming from a data issue with the CDNTs, well, that's a Department of Health issue. And we cannot comprehend why children under the auspices of the Department of Education are suffering because of an issue within the CDNTs. If the issue is there within the CDNTs with their data issues, well, they need to sort that out. The children with special needs in this country, all children with special needs, not just those with Down syndrome, but they're my responsibility today, but all children with special needs, they shouldn't be made to suffer.
We have an issue
in another department.
I beg your pardon, Fadama. We do have a window of opportunity here because this is the criteria that's being used to allocate special education teachers from September onwards. So there is a window here for people to get their ducks in a row, whatever it might be, CDNT, the department, whatever, to sort this out. We can't have children being disadvantaged. All children, by the way.
I agree with you 100%, Greg. We're asking all of our parents to get on board with this, to contact their local TDs, because this has to be highlighted. Because our issue is, like, this is the statement that's made now. What's going to happen to children that maybe might have planned to go to a mainstream school in September 24 or September 25 on down the road? We need to remember that these circulars have been issued for the 2024-2025 year until further notice. Mm-hmm. So that makes it a very long-term prospect. And the worry is there for parents. Of course, parents are worried. They might have originally thought that their child was going to be quite happily in their local schools, but now they're questioning the fact, will my child get supports? And if my child doesn't get those supports, are they going to cope?
Does the department see my child? Does my child exist to them?
Absolutely. And I think that's part of the problem, Greg. I think, you know, the department looking at allocations on numbers and on test scores and on enrolments and on areas of disadvantage, not everybody in the country is living in an area of disadvantage.
Okay.
And, you know, that's really where the issues lie. Mm-hmm. And the department are just going to have to rethink this because It's absolutely scandalous that this has even happened. We shouldn't even have to be talking about this today.
Yeah, well, we're going to be in touch with you again as this process ongoes.
Thank you very much. I would be delighted to come on anytime.
Exactly, just to get any updates, any advancements or lack thereof, because What other better ways to judge a country, to judge its people, to judge its government, to judge whatever it is on how it treats its children? You know, I mean, there are a million other metrics that says we're very wealthy, we're doing well, we're welcoming, we're this, that and the other. But there is one real key metric I think that you can use. How do you treat children? Do you treat them equally? How inclusive of you are? And unless this changes by that measure, we are not in a good place in this country. It cannot be allowed to continue.
Absolutely. And like we have to remember as well, Greg, that we're not just talking about something that's going to go on while the child is in primary school or go on into post-primary school. Like we're trying to ensure that these children are given a good education and as a result will be able to live independent lives, will be part of their community, et cetera, et cetera. If they don't get the necessary supports when they're young and in childhood, there's absolutely no point in talking about great initiatives in adult education and further education, because if they miss the two blocks of primary and post-primary, it's futile.
And then those later supports or later initiatives then are judged on their success, whether they're worthwhile. And obviously their success measures will fall because of...
They won't have the strong base.
Exactly. That's precisely. Thank you for helping me word that. Exactly. Take care of yourself. Yes. Dr. Fidelma Brady, Head of Education, Primary and Post-Primary with Down Syndrome Ireland. It's not just children that she represents or her organisation represents. It's all children, potentially. I want to play a clip, actually, because this is really quite important in this. I'm not sure how much of this will play. We'll listen to it, right, and then we'll see where we go from there, because this did come up for discussion in the Dáil, of course. It was Aidan O'Riordan. He challenged the Taoiseach in the Dáil today on the new set allocation models. 33% of schools are set to lose resources under this model. That was stated by the Minister for Special Education. So let's hear a little bit about how this discussion went in the Dáil.
Remarkable admission last night during oral questions to the Minister for Education from the Minister for Special Education, which says that the new allocation model for special needs resources will mean that 33% of schools will now have less special education needs resources. She admitted this on the floor of the House last night. And this is because complex needs are now being taken out of the criteria for allocation for special educational needs. Now, she said that she had a wide consultation, but the INTO are saying that this model is fundamentally flawed. Now, I think many deputies across the House have had contact from schools who are horrified at the loss of special education needs resources. She says that 67% of schools are not losing resources or are gaining resources, so that means that 33% are losing. So can you revisit this model, please, and ensure that schools will not lose the resources they have on the basis of complex needs, which are now not being counted for under the new allocation model?
My understanding is that the allocations are made every year and it's based on the profile of the children in the school. So, for example, in any given year, children with particular needs may leave the school, move on to another one, or more kids may come in with a need. So it's based on the profile of the children in the school, not the school itself. And what you say, I understand, is correct, is that we have 1,000 more special education teachers than we had back in 2021, and two-thirds of schools will be gaining hours or having the number of hours remain the same. About one-third will be losing, and in most cases less than 5 hours. But my understanding is that's based on the profile of children currently in the school or are due to be in the school for next year.
All right. What I don't understand, though, is how can you gauge the profile of the school children? How can you gauge the profile of the school children if you take out... if you take out the ability to know what their needs actually might be? The complex educational need criteria is being removed from the form. So if it is about the makeup of the children within the school, how will the children with complex educational needs be actually known of if you no longer ask that question? Which I'm not sure actually in that exchange that the Taoiseach is fully aware that that category and complex educational needs is being removed. I could be wrong, but his response sounds like he's not aware of that. All right, okay, so you can WhatsApp your comments to us by voice note. Earlier on, we were talking to Anne-Marie, who returned home to Ireland, to North Inishowen, to run a family business, very involved in the community, can't get a GP spot for her or her children. And she was speaking in the context of a call from government for people to come home and work in Ireland. This is a view of one listener.
Can you imagine telling the Irish construction workers to come back home after listening to that show there? Hey, with their families.
John, that caller not convinced. Okay, John Malone is of ChristianTVIreland.ie and joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning. Good morning.
I think it was towards the end of last week that we learned of the closure of Veritas shops around Ireland. So can you just, for those who may not be familiar with these outlets, what kind of services they provide? What's the background to them?
That's right. Well, now I shop in the one in Middle Abbey Street in Dublin. I live in an old castle, but I travel up there and I shop in Veritas in Middle Abbey Street in Dublin. And then they have one in Blanchardstown Shopping Centre, and I often go there because it's kind of handier in some ways. I don't have to go into Dublin. When I go into Dublin, I park in Navan and go up in the bus, because you can't drive a car in Dublin nowadays, which way you were going. And now with regard to Veritas, Veritas is established as a Catholic bookstore over 100 years, not long after we got our freedom. And they have 7 stores, including one in Letterkenny and one in Derry, and one in Cork and one in Limerick, and then their distribution centre. Now, they provide a great service, and the staff that I deal with, when you go in, very helpful and experienced. And when you walk into Veritas, you're walking into a place that you're going to be dealt with people that have great respect for what they do and for the people that support them. And quite a few do, even though the excuse now is that sales have slackened or something like that. But sales, according to who I talk to, are not as bad as what is indicated by the statement.
Just in relation to that, if you don't mind, John, because what I can find a little bit confusing is that in 2022, Veritas recorded a profit of in 2021, 252,000. And then the following year it was a loss of 224, which is a swing of almost $500,000. It's interesting to note. I wonder what happened from one year with a $250,000 profit to the next a $250,000 loss.
Well, no, exactly. That's hard to explain. When you make a profit, obviously it's some is given to, I presume, the bishops that apparently own it. And you put some into reserve for the rainy day. And they must have experienced a rainy day a year afterwards. It doesn't seem to add up because they opened a couple of new stores, which would have added to the overall, I would have thought, profit. Now, the only store that they own is the one in Middle Abbey Street. The rest of their stores are either leased or rented. And as you know yourself, when you rent when you're young, but it's a prudent thing to buy and own your house, likewise your premises. Now, I've done a video in the Christian TV Ireland.ie, John Malone, that's the way to look it up, a few days ago for Veritas, and I've made a plea of I'm willing to put up 10,000 euro of my own private income money and to plea for maybe 1,000 other practicing Catholics to do likewise, 10,000, and that would be a substantial amount of money, and to operate on the cooperative movement at the Stutter Farm down the centuries.
Okay. If you don't mind, sorry, if you dig a little bit deeper into it, it seems that this the company was quite indebted, though. Veritas Communication owed €625,000 at the end of 2022. They also have a €400,000 loan, I believe, to pay back. I'm not sure if that's inclusive in the 625 or not. But anyway, be that as it may, is it wise, with the best will in the world, John, for you and others to be throwing good money after bad? And I don't mean Veritas being bad. I mean the business model being bad, because it's clear if they're accruing that level of loss. Is it wise for you and to ask others to put money into that? Because judging by the amount of money that they are losing and that they owe, this money perhaps could be better spent elsewhere. And I say that with absolute respect, John. It's your money. You're free to do with what you like. But the indebtedness is so high. I just wonder if you're throwing it into a hole and could make better use of it elsewhere.
Well, fair dues, but I don't think so.
Okay.
You see, the expertise that the staff have and the fact that they're established over 100 years when times were very poor, as those of us old enough to remember what it was like even when I was young and growing up and living in Boyle County, Roscommon, where my father was a Garda. And without a doubt, we were happy, but we didn't have much funds. And most of us were lucky to have a bicycle. So now, with regard to Veritas, the fact of the matter is that's peanuts in business, to my way of thinking. And you often have a valley period with the best will in the world. So they're well worth support, and they have the expertise. They can be made a bit leaner. A manager can be put in charge, and his responsibility would be to sort of make sure that it was run on a profitable manner with one or two permanent staff, and then mostly part-time and that type of thing. And managers put in charge of the various stores to operate in that way to make them efficient and profitable.
So, John, if people want to sort of back you in what you want to say, see the video that you've made, christiantvireland.ie or your social media, or John, how can people access that information?
In order to check the video that I did, look up christiantvireland.ie and put John Malone after it, because when you look it up, there's often other ones that don't do anything anywhere.
No problem.
But Christian TV Ireland, we're going now a few years, and we've got plenty of subscribers, and we've got funds that we're hoping to start a Christian TV Ireland station to stand up for the Catholic faith under attack, as you know yourself. And people buy some goods on the internet when it's far better to go into a store where you can talk to people. Mm-hmm. After all, what's the point of going and spending your time buying stuff on the internet when you're not talking to anybody and you're not getting the sort of support and advice and help that you get in the Veritas stores?
Right.
With good staff, good experienced staff, it would be a disgrace for them to close, irrespective of the situation. They made a profit a couple of years ago, so they're fit to make a profit, and if they're running the proper lines and the cooperative lines, they will make a profit.
Okay, John Malone, thank you very much for your time. I really do appreciate that. Now, here are details again of the fantastic quiz we have running all this week in association with our friends at the Holyrood Hotel in beautiful Bundoran. It's your chance for a great prize, and this prize will be won tomorrow, by the way. I'll give you a couple of chances to hear this between now and 12. But here are the details and how you enter.
This week we have a fantastic end of week prize courtesy of the Holyrood Hotel for one lucky winner, which includes one night bed and breakfast for two people at the Holyrood Hotel Bundoran with champagne and chocolates on arrival, followed by a spa treatment each in the Holyrood's luxurious spa at Orchids. Finish off your evening with a four-course dinner and a bottle of wine in their watermelon restaurant, plus full use of the Blue River Leisure Centre swimming pool and Canadian hot tub. Your spa experience includes a private session in the outdoor hot tub and sauna, and a 60-minute spa treatment, each inspired to give you a captivating night's sleep, beginning with a serene back massage, followed by a beautifully soothing scalp, hand and arm massage. To be in with a chance of winning this fantastic prize on Friday, simply answer this question. What city is often called the City of Love and is home to iconic sites such as the Eiffel Tower and Notre Dame Cathedral? Text or WhatsApp your answer, name and address to 086 60 25000.
Okay, we're joined on the programme now by Carlene Little of the Culdaff Development Association. Good morning to you.
Hi, Greg. Thanks very much for having us on.
Good to have you on the show. Have I got the pronunciation of your first name correct?
Carlene,
that's exactly what I said. Tell you, even a broken clock is right twice a day. Right, okay. Beautiful Culdaff, and you're a member of the Culdaff Development Association. And you're inviting people in the area to have their say on the future. Talk to us a little bit about it, Carlene.
So, Greg, I'm working with the Culdaff Association on a project that is supported by Community Foundation Ireland to help the community make an action plan that really will give local people a chance to, you know, turn some of the discussion around climate change into concrete actions. So we have the Development Association working with the Cladach Tidy Towns, and they are building on some of the projects that they've done so far, like a community orchard, the community polytunnel, village cleanups, and the Free Wee Library. And they want to just get like other ideas and then present to the village the ideas that they have for different initiatives that will address climate change, but give people a chance to do something, you know, like concrete, tangible, because there's a lot of discussion about climate change, but it's such a big issue that people can feel a little bit overwhelmed. This gives people a chance to take their ideas and see if we can't work together to get some of them put in place.
Yeah, and of course, you know, it's the whole idea of this conversation is to invite people to come forward with their ideas and not to sort of feed people ideas, but so we have an understanding, like, as to what a potential suggestion might be that would enhance Cladach in this way that wouldn't be there present there already, for an example.
Well, we're looking at different themes. So if you look at the different themes, say, for example, energy, there's been a suggestion of an electrical car charging point at the beach, or, you know, an upgrade of the energy efficiency of the wee hall, or we have the community polytunnel, and we'd like to maybe look at a community composting sort of scheme that people could bring their waste, and that waste could be put into like a microbiodigester. I don't know whether you've seen the ones that the Wiser have been working on in Letterkenny, but you know, they're very like small scale microbiodigester that generates a little bit of gas. So, you know, the ideas can be big or small. As I say, the Cladach Development Association, the Cladach Tidy Towns, and the CE scheme workers and their volunteers have all been doing like great things so far. But I think it's important to, you know, make sure it's actually what the people want. So, you know, since putting out about the event next Wednesday in the Wee Hall, we've had people contact us about, you know, maybe doing some stuff with like art in the environment, get people into nature more. Because, as you say, we're beautiful Cladach. We have not just a blue flag beach, but we have, you know, a lovely coastal walk down to the beach along the river. We've got a really rich like natural heritage, you know, the sites which date back to early Christianity, where the St. Bowden came up the Cladach River. So, you know, we've got a lot here. We've got a lot of assets. We need to find a way of you know, making people invest in them. And
And for sure, it's not about really changing the world as such, but every journey starts with a simple step, of course. But it's also an opportunity maybe to set Cladach apart in additional ways as well, I presume.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. As I say, we have got a fantastic natural workshop that we did in the Wee Hall. So we know we've got like something different. The links to early Christianity along the river, the links to the you know, Neolithic sites that we have, we've got something, you know, really rich and original in our natural
heritage. And if you go the further you go back to be it Christianity or whatever, it was far more involved in the land, in you know what I mean, there was far more intertwined than it is now. So, but Cladach has that history, and it can be built on, of course. So, what is the process then post this meeting? And we'll finish up reminding people when it is. What's the implementation of this? You know, so how does some of these suggestions that are achievable get funded, get acted upon? You know, who's the responsible in that area?
Well, you probably know there are, you know, a lot of funding streams that are open now, and all of them really need to address biodiversity, climate action. So the you know, the most upcoming one, the Donegal County Council has their Climate Action Fund, which you know, they're looking for project ideas. Then there's other funders like Community Foundation Ireland. So we want to make sure that we have a strategy for, you know, the smaller projects, but then also something bigger that will make Cladach
stand out. And, okay.
will be achievable.
So the Coldaff Tidy Towns Group are hosting this meeting in association with the Coldaff Development Association. It's Wednesday in the Wee Hall, one of the nicest named halls in Ireland. The Wee Hall, February 21st, which is next Wednesday, 6 p.m. And you know what? It's sort of as well, you don't necessarily have to go in there with your, I don't think, with your suggestions. It's kind of like, you know, an ideas event as well, whereby, you know, things will develop through people gathering. You know, yes. So I don't think you need to necessarily, and correct me if I'm wrong, walk in there with a master plan. But if you have an interest and some input, you can help formulate the plan.
And also to say, you know, if you're not able to make it on Wednesday, please get in touch with us. We're going to have a, you know, an online survey. So if you can't make the Wednesday, if you can't drop in between 6 and 8, then do get in touch with coldafftidytowns@gmail.com. Also, if you have any accessibility issues, like if you need support to be able to get up to the Wee Hall, you know, if you have any accessibility issues, get in touch with us too, just to make sure that it's open to as many people as possible.
For sure. Carleen, thanks so much. Have a lovely day. Take care of yourself.
Thank
Carleen
you.
Little there of the Coldaff Development Association. That meeting in the Wee Hall next Wednesday. So that's next Wednesday, Wednesday of next week at 6 p.m. Is there a particular antisocial behaviour problem in Letterkenny? The Letterkenny Lifford MD, Mayor Councillor Kevin Bradley, spoke recently of daylight drug deals, underage drinking. Apparently drugs are being dealt in broad daylight, underage drinking taking place at public amenities across the town. Kevin Bradley made those claims, calling for security to be increased, and has warned that parents ought to be vigilant. It's unbelievable what's going on in this town. Is it that bad? 086 60 25,000. Christy Gallagher is a former Garda sergeant, joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Christy.
Good morning, Greg.
I mean, that's the mayor of the Letterkenny Milford Municipal District. He's a Letterkenny man. He's not making stuff up. He clearly believes there's a significant problem with daylight drug dealing. People, obviously, if they do that, they don't fear getting caught, because you wouldn't do it if you did. Underage drinking, it sets a tone for a particular area. Is this something that you're aware of? Has it been something that's always been present in any sort of urban concentration?
I think, I was just before you rang me, looked up a rapid evidence review study of the understanding and addressing social behaviour carried out under the auspices of the Health Research Board and the Department of Justice in 2022. And it found that from CSO figures and statistics that it just doesn't antisocial behaviour isn't just specific to any one area. It is multiple areas that it affects, primarily in Dublin, funny enough. And what we have here is nothing other than what we've had for the last number of decades, antisocial behaviour in relation to drug taking and alcohol, and primarily amongst the youth as well, sadly. And how do we counteract that? And the question is, what interventions or robust interventions can we put into place to counteract this? Yes, you can talk about the youth restorative justice schemes that we have and everything else, but there needs to be more community interventions. Like, we have a lot of community NGOs and the community centre here and the youth club here in Lower Main Street and everything else. Are they being utilised fully and significantly enough for youth interventions? And I think that's the way we should be going, the collaboration between the state agencies and NGOs and communities, to try to find out and underline what the problems are, number one, because a lot of it comes from social deprivation and poverty and things like that, as you know, Greg, where young people are just at a loose end and they've nowhere to go, or
disadvantaged areas. I get you, Christy, and I'm not saying that Letterkenny isn't that, but, you know, I'm from a more rural part of the county and, you know, don't even have a cinema. Now, I know cinemas aren't cheap necessarily, but don't get me wrong. There's an awful lot going on in Letterkenny for young people compared to elsewhere. I'm thinking skate parks and all that type of stuff. No end of sporting organisations. Yeah. Stuff that can occupy young people for free as well. Do you know, I did mention cinemas at the get-go, probably not the best example. So Letterkenny has an awful lot of what other towns and other rural areas simply does not have. If you're dealing dealing drugs in broad daylight, if you're boozing without fear, even though it's actually against the law, if you're boozing in public and knocking around public areas drinking, you clearly aren't worried about the guards. You clearly aren't worried about anyone speaking to you. Is this not really a policing matter? Mm. Because, as I say, Letterkenny has an awful lot of resources other areas of this county and country don't have.
Yeah, it is, as I said, state agencies in collaboration with community organisations need to, to step up to the mark at the end of the day. And one of the things, and I've called for many times, is the increasing foot patrols. Now, we have a dedicated drugs units here in Letterkenny that, really are going out there and doing the job that they are paid to do. But they can't be in every street and every corner of every place and all of this. But people have people see drug dealing going on, then it's up to them to bring it in and say, look, there's an issue of drinking and drugs.
If we were in if me and you got in a car now, say we were in Limerick or Cork, right? It would take us a day to sort of probably meander around all the different places and all the problems.
Yeah.
If me and you got into a car in Letterkenny now, we could be in the four or five hotspots and visit all of those within 20 minutes. Do you know what I mean? We're not talking a sprawling city here.
No, I know. I understand.
It's tiny. Mm. You could throw a blanket over it. It shouldn't take acres of resources, should it? It would just take a plan.
Well, I mean, that's what we talked about years ago. We had targeted approaches here in Letterkenny years ago. When I was here in Letterkenny, we had Guardian Patrol every day and a lot of the areas where there is antisocial behaviour and that things what you're talking about. Unfortunately, we have seen diminution or reduction in the number of foot patrols that are taking place. We have community patrols per se, but they're not on the same level as we had maybe 10 to 12 years ago or more. And that's another factor that has to be looked at. Where are the numbers of members that we have now that should be out on patrols, knowing their local areas, knowing their local businesses, shopkeepers, all of the information that we can gather from all of those. That's all very well, those targeted interventions and a robust reaction from our state agency like the Garda Síochána. But we also need, after that is all said and done, we need also other interventions where we can say to young people, look, how does it affect their family individuals and the wider community, and what can we do to help those as well? Is there enough investment? I mean, the Donegal County Council, I'm sure, could also invest in those community, and I'm sure they have, but we could look at those interventions where young people who are straying into those aspects of antisocial behaviour, that we can move them away from that and make them more productive members of society. Mm-hmm. We don't look at that,
we need a plan, because I'm sure, for instance, it's possible some of these young people are from different backgrounds. They haven't been here as long. Like, is there a policing plan? Is there, right across the board that recognises that all of these children have different backgrounds? Now, I don't say different backgrounds culturally. I mean, just come from different places. Like, what is the plan? If you walk down Letterkenny Main Street now, there can be quite a lot of loitering. I'll use loitering because that kind of has criminal implications. Maybe I don't mean it in that way, but just hanging around that people feel they have to cross the streets. That's not a reference to non-Irish teenagers. That's not my point there, just in case people believe I'm going down that route. But are they being engaged with? Are they being talked to? What's the crack, lads? What are you up to today? Is there a plan?
Every year there's a policing plan in relation to all aspects of policing in this country. And local superintendents and chiefs draw up a policing plan, what they're going to do, what their objectives are, and what the outcomes should be. I mean, that's all very well on paper, and I agree with you there. There is a plan, per se. But we're living in a very diverse and multicultural society now, and you know that yourself, from people from all arts and parts of the world. Now, how do we engage with all of those, making them part of the society that we live in as well? And one of the things that we don't really, I don't see a lot of, and we do see with some community NGOs that they try to focus on bringing people together. And I think that's what we need to do, more focused on those things that bring people together and say, look, this is not what this is, we shouldn't go down this route here. Maybe we could invest more in youth community programs, things that will move children or young people away, not just necessarily young people. There are people
again, Christy, I hope you don't think I'm being argumentative, but you know, Letterkenny has things like the Loft and you know, other drop-in places where young people can go in and have a game of pool, whatever. There's so many initiatives, as to say, that Letterkenny has that other areas don't have, and I just don't understand then why they... I'm not saying they're not working, that's terrible, I don't mean it like that, but are they having... do they need further supports or whatever to connect young people with the fantastic facilities that Letterkenny seemingly has?
Yeah.
Open to correction on that as well. It's a conversation, not statements of facts from me.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I agree with you there. I think more robust interventions where young people are going down, not just through the juvenile diversion schemes and things that the Garda Síochána have, but we need to have a more focused interventions where if there is a difficulty, say, with young people in a certain area, that we can get our NGOs or like a community wardens that we're talking about recently, people who can engage with young people, including members of the Garda Síochána and our community policing groups, that they engage with those young people and try to divert them or steer them into those community areas.
And I know that's one strand, Christy, and you're right to point out there are multiple strands. At the end of the day, though, the bottom line is, and this isn't the silver bullet, what activity that's being talked about here is already illegal. You know what I mean? And I think what you're talking of has to run alongside enforcement, which is to say you've fully recognised as well, of course.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. I think my ethos was when I was in the job, and like that, it's not all about enforcement and about getting people to before the courts or through the juvenile justice systems. It's about what interventions can we put in place, all of us, community and state agencies, put in place to divert those young people into maybe education or maybe apprenticeships and things like that there. Just to focus them more on those things, that they feel a better self-worth.
Oh, for sure. I agree with you. We can't just criminalise people across the board. No. We have to make sure that we're supporting them as well. All right, Christy, thank you. Christy Galligan, former Garda Sergeant there. Now, a quick reminder for you, and you can get your texts in now before John is on. But I have yet a few bits and bobs to go through. I just want to give you one more reminder of the brilliant competition running today in association with our friends at the Hollywood Hotel down in Bundoran.
This week, we have a fantastic end-of-week prize courtesy of the Holyrood Hotel for one lucky winner, which includes one night bed and breakfast for two people at the Holyrood Hotel Bundoran with champagne and chocolates on arrival, followed by a spa treatment each in the Holyrood's luxurious spa at Orchids. Finish off your evening with a four-course dinner and a bottle of wine in their watermelon restaurant, plus full use of the Blue River Leisure Centre swimming pool and Canadian hot tub. Your spa experience includes a private session in the outdoor hot tub and sauna, and a 60-minute spa treatment, each inspired to give you a captivating night's sleep, beginning with a serene back massage, followed by a beautifully soothing scalp and arm massage. To be in with a chance of winning this fantastic prize on Friday, simply answer this question. What city is often called the City of Love and is home to iconic sites such as the Eiffel Tower and Notre Dame Cathedral? Text or WhatsApp your answer, name and address to 086 60 25,000.
Now, of course, tomorrow being Friday, we have our Friday panel joining us from 9. And that is three guests to discuss some of the big stories of the day, whatever happens overnight throughout the week. We want you involved in that conversation as well. And also, we have That's Entertainment, where we sort of ease our way into the weekend as well, and plenty more in between. So don't forget to come back and join us tomorrow morning at 9. And if you're listening to the podcast right now, hi, good to have you on board. Or if you're listening to us overnight, please feel free to have your say on any of the issues we've been talking about. And email comments@highlandradio.com. comments@highlandradio.com. So even if you're listening to the pod, and we do have quite a number of podcast devotees, we really do appreciate that. Or if you're listening overnight, don't forget you can get involved in the conversation as well by emailing comments@highlandradio.com. We pick them up overnight and then broadcast them for you the next day. So no end of ways for you to get involved. I'm leaving, unfortunately, dozens of comments behind me here, but they will actually form part of our conversations tomorrow. So every single one is read, and we try and read as many out on air as is possible. But for now, we're going to bid you adieu. For me, Greg Hughes, Caroline Orr, who researched and produced the show, Shannon working hard on the programme as well and looking after the social media, etc. We're back at 9. Stay tuned. John Breslin's up around the Northwest after the news headlines at 12.